The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Captain William E. Simpson, head of steam out there for the Wild Horse Fire Brigade in Northern California. Hey, Bill, welcome back. Good to have you on.
Good morning. How are you? And welcome back to our side of the continent here.
Yeah, it's interesting times. Interesting times back. And, you know, it's funny. At the high school reunion, Bill, that's where I was last weekend, that everything that they think about California and Southern and Oregon, really, they always think about the big major population centers. You know, it's Portland, it's Los Angeles, it's San Francisco. And they know very little, I think, about the challenges that we've been facing here in Southern Oregon, Northern California. You've been keeping us up on that, especially Klamath River, the dam removal here, you know, those kind of issues. Wild Horse Fire Brigade, the fire smoke, and the various fire policies that we've all been struggling under. And I told you that yesterday, listener Mark dropped by a half gallon or so of Klamath River water taken from Happy Camp from the middle of the channel and just grabbing the flow. And it's like chocolate soup. And yet all we see in the media right now, Bill, happy stories about, oh, the river is running free and the tribes, the magic fish will be returning, you know, and oh, and finally a huge environmental degradation and crime has been finally resolved. And is there no critical thinking about what's actually happening in that river? Really? And, you know, it does make sense.
No, it's unfortunate, Bill. I was looking at the propaganda coming out of the state down there in Sacramento from Gavin Newsom's office. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's taken a big personal stake in the dam removal. And I guess his political career might even be riding on this right now, because if this, he is desperate to have this be a success at any cost, even if it's an illusional success.
How could there be any way to paint this as a success unless your success is to succeed in your religious zeal of just taking out the infrastructure that will not do anything to really bring the fish back?
Realistically. I agree. I mean, in my article, I talk about them. You know, the United States military could have taken out those dams in 5 minutes and spend maybe $20 million. With a few well-placed missiles for a drone strike.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and quite frankly, I don't think the pollution would have been any worse.
Funny to think about this? And we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars of ratepayer money into the grand grifters out there that are just feeding off of the Pacific Power ratepayers here in Southern Oregon and Northern California, you know, to do this. And yet, right from the beginning, we were told that we had to dredge this stuff out, all of this clay. I'm looking at, in this one bottle here, tons of clay. And it wasn't shaken. It was this way last night when I left the radio station, and it's still suspended in there. There's no fish coming back in water like this, Bill.
No, they killed the whole river in January. I mean, it was dead top. From John Boyle down, I mean, the upper reach between, you know, Klamath Lake and above Boyle, the river was never damaged from this action. But mm-hmm. from the dams down, you know, you're looking at, you know, about 200 miles or so of river. It's been heavily silted in, and the silt, I don't even like that term, because silt is one type of particle in the sediment.
Yeah, that's kind of like fine dirt or even little sand, right?
What you've got, and I'm watching you on Facebook, what you've got is the same thing we see down here, and that's suspended clay particles. Clay particles are microscopic. They're way smaller than silt.
They stay in suspension for a long time, don't they?
That's right, and they can go places no other particle can go, you know, like in the gills of fish and other places, and that's why they seal ponds with that stuff. It finds the tiniest little holes. And it fills them up. Microscopic-sized holes get filled with clay. And so that clay there is coated. And it's really nasty. There's so many people that don't live on the river that just read these ridiculous propaganda pieces. And you'll notice that you can look at all the pablum that's been served up by Gavin Newsom and ABC and NBC and CBS, and even our local channels are buying off on this crap and just repeating the pablum and the public mass, you know, media, which is, oh, everything's fine, and they don't show one picture. There is not one picture out there on the mainstream media of the reality of the Klamath River, which is, it's like brown, well, it was originally like black pudding for about 3 or 4 days. It's just black, like motor oil.
Now it reminds me of the look of, if you were to take Nestle Quick back when you had milk and you, as a little kid, and you'd whip it up into that chocolatey-looking frothy soup, that's what it looks like to me when I look at this water coming out of the Klamath.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, the you know, where they're messing around with the bottom of the lake there at the foot of the dam at Iron Gate, you know, a lot of material settled out of the river there for 65 years, and it's all heavy metal. I mean, a big lake is just like the DEQ settling ponds that they require at industrial sites to settle out the dangerous pollutants in the water. I mean, when you have a potentially polluted effluent, and our river carries a lot of natural and, of course, some anthropogenic things that are coming down, you know, you would normally put in some sort of a settling pond to, you know, remediate the water and clean it up before it goes further down. That's what the DEQ recommends. They have videos all about settling ponds. Anybody can go look it up if they really care. Of course, there's so many people out there that are just going along with the narrative. But if you really want to know what's happened here, is these lakes have settled out just, you know, hundreds and hundreds of tons of heavy pollutants, you know, lead, arsenic, cadmium, beryllium, titanium. I mean, there's stuff in there you can't believe. And a lot of it, you know, comes from, of course, back in the day when they were building dams and we weren't quite as, you know, environmentally oriented.
Yeah. Now, I'm kind of curious, Bill, if I were to take this water sample here, and I know this is not perhaps pure because it was put in a plastic bottle, I don't know. But if I were to take this at, you know, to, let's say, Grants Pass Water Lab, for example, and have them test it, what do you think it would come back and say? Any ideas? Has anybody else had it done? Just curious.
Yeah, well, CDM Smith did it. Okay, CDM Smith did two studies. In 2011, early, they did a study on how to remove these dams correctly. And they said, well, you got to dredge out the sediment and then slowly let the dams go down. Let the water go out very slowly. And that way you minimize the movement of the sediment down into the mainstream of the main stem of the Klamath. So, and that was what that was published. And of course, when they found out the price tag to do it correctly, they go, well, no, we need a cheaper way. Well, right then and there, the decision was made that money was more important than the proper restoration of the river. You don't hear the tribes talking about this ever because they're getting lots of money given to them to just go along with the narrative. And
so in other words, I hate to put it this way. The term is that the tribes were bought off. And of course, you're not supposed to be able to criticize the tribes because, well, this is the, you know, the sacred river being restored. But is it really being restored? I would say no.
And there's a whole big debate about that. I mean, I respect culture and tradition.
Sure.
And they need to respect our culture and tradition too. I mean, everybody's got their culture and tradition and maybe religious beliefs even. The thing is if you're gonna throw it out there as being cultural and tribal and all these kinds of things, then you shouldn't be using a modern way of catching fish, gill netting and things like that. I mean, you know, and the other thing too is during this dam removal ceremony they had the other day. It was last week on Wednesday by the way, they didn't tell the county or anybody in the county this was going to happen. They didn't want anybody to show up who might have been, you know, basically more agnostic. They wanted just all the cheerleaders to show up, and they all showed up at the bottom. There's 100 cars at Iron Gate Dam, and they all went up there and looked at the potential. You know, it's kind of like when you break ground, there's a silver shovel, and some dignitary takes the first scoop. Well, they all showed up to see the excavator take a scoop of dirt, and it was hooray, and people were crying and, you know, chanting, and it was like some sort of mass, you know,
psychosis is what it was.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. And then they had a salmon feed, and they go, oh, the fish are in the river. The fish are swimming freely in the river. Well, No, they're not.
There's
That's
no
not
way
true at
that
all.
This. There's no way. I'm going to hold up to the Facebook Live. There's no way that the fish are swimming freely through this. If they are, they're suffocating and dying as we speak. If they are swimming through that river right now.
Well, you know, the timing of this. Well, first of all, even if they hadn't done this, and the Chinook salmon were starting to arrive in July, of course they were catching them at the mouth because they know if they go up the river, they're going to go belly up and then float back down, and people will get pictures of that. So they're catching as many as they can at the mouth.
Oh, and, okay.
And so they don't want, because they know if they go in the river, there's no food.
Now, when you say they're catching them, are they going to catch them and truck them around? Is that the goal?
No. They're just catching them, and they're fully grown. They've been in the ocean 4 years.
Okay.
They're coming back, and they're harvesting them, and they're not going to let any go up and spawn because they'll die. They won't spawn because, number one, there's no food in the river. Number two, there's so much turbidity, they'll suffocate. Number three, the spawning beds are completely glazed over with this sediment, and it's feet deep. It's not just like an inch or two. It's feet deep, okay? Mm-hmm. And their fugia are the deep holes where they rest between runs, because the salmon doesn't just swim all the way up the river in one motion. They'll swim a ways, and then they find a deep pool, and then they rest, okay, and feed a little bit. And then they move, you know, in a day or two or on the next rain, they'll move to the next deeper fugia. Well, all those deep pools are full, and there's just full of mud, and that's it. So everybody knows there's not going to be anything happening. So this canard that, oh, look at it, we're having a fish dinner, and the fish are in the river. Well, no, they're not, okay? Those are fish that came, by the way, they're talking about as a wonderful return of salmon.
Well, yeah, four years ago, right?
Guess what? Those fish came down that river. They came down that river.
Yeah, they came down the river three, four years ago, back when the mean old nasty dam was supposedly stopping them, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know,
I'll tell you.
And here's the thing. Without those dams now, here's what's going to be happening. It's just, and people need to write this down because this is exactly what's going to happen. Without the dams remediating the different anthropogenic and natural pollutants that come down the river, we're going to go backwards. We have less water flow than we've had in some years on the Klamath, because they're holding back water up above at the lake, and then they're holding back so much water they ended up having an outbreak of bird flu in Tule Lake, and I guess, I don't know, millions of birds died up there because of that. So they're going to have to release water there. The farmers are, you know, trying to grow food to feed people, and they're cutting them off. That's a huge mistake. Who's going to pay for that loss of economic income, the jobs? Mm. And oh, by the way, when all these happy people go down and they want to buy a head of lettuce and it costs twice as much as it did last year, we'll see how they like that, you know.
Well, my prediction, how long do you think here, Captain William E. Simpson with me once again, Bill, how long do you think it'll be before we see headlines in the local media in which the truth finally comes out that, no, removing the dams did not restore the salmon? How many years will it take before they have to admit the truth on this?
That's a good question. It depends on the political will of these people that are making money on the grift here, because right now they're running as fast as they can toward the Snake River. And mm-hmm. before the bad news gets out on this, you know, that what might be, you know, like, I guess that Senator Simpson up there, no relation to me, wants to take out those dams up there, a huge mistake.
I know that Cliff Bentz is fighting that one tooth and nail and dagger, you know, on this one, because he realized it was too late to do much about this one, unfortunately.
Right. And so that's why they're obfuscating so much of the bad news about what's happened here, is because they want to get that done in a big hurry, and they don't want the bad news to eventually, you know, get out to where people can actually consider what really happened in Clem. You know, it's like a mystery now, because they've done such a good job of hiding it. It's almost like a criminal enterprise, you know, where you try to cover up a crime. You know, they're not showing the truth. They're not showing the actual pictures of the river. I mean, it's up to independent journalists. I mean, you know, Jay Martin down here at Siskiyou News. Yeah,
I know Jay's doing a great job at Siskiyou.News, but here's the thing is, though. In other words, will the tribes go along with it as long as the hot government checks are coming? Is that maybe what we're looking at?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, if you look at the income they're getting off salmon compared to the millions of dollars that are being poured, there's no comparison. The money that's pouring in on them from this narrative of removing dams, I think, far outstrips any kind of economic income. And that's what everybody said. I mean, I have an email from Glenn Spain, who's on the board of KRRC, a fisheries guy, who said very frankly that this isn't about fish, it's about economics.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the American taxpayer is being, you know, hoodwinked on this whole thing. They're being told that this is so important, this is so wonderful. You know, there will be no cultural fish in the coming years, because what's happened in this river is going to take a very long time. It's not going to be years. We look at, they keep holding out Elwha Dam as their example. Well, that's apples and oranges comparison. Elwha is 41 miles long. It's 1,000 miles north of here, where it's way colder. It's on the Olympic Peninsula, which is bathed in the Arctic fog that comes off the North Pacific.
And it's also not part of a reverse watershed, which the Klamath is,
right? Yeah, the water that comes down that mountain is ice cold, precipitated fog and rain.
And that's not the water that comes out of Klamath Lake. The water that comes out of Klamath Lake is hot, you know? It's warm.
Well, it's nasty. It's nasty. It's Klamath Lake is rich in phosphorus. There's millions of birds that poop in it every year. All that nitrates go into solution. I mean, it's kind of like a natural septic tank up there. It's not, and it's an average of 15 feet deep, so it's a solar bath. The bottom is black organic material. So the sun shines down in there, and the sun's shining harder than it ever has because, you know, our ozone layer is thinner than ever before. There's a lot of complex considerations here that the Native Americans don't have the bandwidth to look at this. They're looking at, how do we survive, right? Mm-hmm. They're like everybody. They're just like, they think they're different than us.
So you grab the grift and you go along with the lie, even though because it's the short term survival. I understand that, and people get bought off by, hey, this is what I need now rather than what might be. But I figure within the next 10 years, we might see some truth coming out, some truthful reporting in the mainstream on this, but I don't know if we have 10 years. Bill, I just wanted to make sure and direct people to your latest article on Siskiyou.news, because you delve a lot into this, and I'm out of time right now, and we'll have you back. You know, you're always welcome, but is what is good environmentalism about today, and what is being reported on this travesty is not certainly good environmentalism, and we have to keep waving the flag of truth, real truth on this one, and not the politicized truth. Okay, is that fair enough on this before we take off?
Yeah, we got to fight the good fight, because the majority of Americans are going to suffer from this. The minority is getting wealthy off of it, and the majority of Americans are getting screwed over, and we can't let it happen again. The lessons learned in Klamath River have to be the lessons that go forward and stop dam removal in the Snake River. That's just what's got to happen.
Indeed. Doc, Captain William Simpson II and William E. Simpson, Wild Horse Fire Brigade, put your information up there as always. And Bill, thanks for being on. We appreciate the take as always. Okay. Take care.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
836, this is KMED.
If you're searching for a property with a well, don't.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
20 before 9. Let me go to Brad. Hey, Brad, what's on your mind this morning, huh?
Bill, good morning to you. Great show this morning. Glad to have you back.
Well, thank you.
Saddle. So this is where I remind you that my mom grew up on the Klamath, the property that they built the Iron Gate Dam on. The Calor actually bought from my grandfather.
You've mentioned this before there.
And when she was a little girl fishing on that river, the water was clear. The water went up, the water went down. If you had a hot summer, the water would get hot. The hot water would kill the fish because they had no way to regulate the water temperature. Like Bill said, that water there without the dams is incredibly shallow a great part of the year. People don't know that. People don't remember that because it was a long time ago. So now not only do we have shallow water that is going to overheat, we now have the water completely congested and plugged up with all kinds of sediment, including clay. And clay does not dissolve into water very well. So here's something that I want to mention. A lot of people don't understand this or know this, is that this whole Klamath, so-called Klamath River Renewal Corporation, is really kind of an odd deal in itself, because if you go to the Oregon Secretary of State website, you find out that their offices are where? If you look at their articles of incorporation, their articles are in Berkeley, California. So this is really a weird deal. They're listed as a foreign nonprofit, and this isn't me. This isn't my opinion. This is right off the Oregon Secretary of State research site. They are listed as a foreign nonprofit, and their offices, their articles of incorporation, were filed in California. It lists their offices as being in California. I'm not going to tell you who their agents are, but the thing is that when the Indian tribes and all of these other people finally realize, you know, it was the question you asked Bill, how long is it going to take for people to realize what a horrible man-made disaster this is? The answer is all they have to do is liquidate the paperwork on this corporation, and there is nothing for anybody to go after, Bill, nothing. This whole thing, this whole so-called Klamath Renewal Corporation, foreign nonprofit, offices in California. And once they do all the damage that they can do, all they have to do is fold their tent, and there's nothing for anybody to go after.
Duly noted, and we've noted right from the beginning that KRRC doesn't have any money that Pacific Power or Warren Buffett didn't give them. That was taken from the ratepayers in the first place, or ratepayers, rather. And what I'm kind of curious about is if Pacific Power can really buy their way out of the liability for the destruction of the dam. I just don't know if they can.
They can't, because the only way anybody can go after them is they have to penetrate this corporate veil. Because what they did was very clever. Nobody wanted to buy into the risk factor on this thing, so they created this so-called River Renewal.
Well, it's a shell corporation. It's a shell corporation that has no money of its own. Right.
Bill, you're absolutely correct. So they created this shell corporation to be the public face of this thing, so they could all sit in the shadows and just get it done. And so when everybody and I'll tell you who's really getting hurt here, and it's sad. It is so sad. It's going to be the Karuk tribe. It's going to be the Klamaths. It's going to be the Modocs. It's going to be all of these Indian tribes that were promised the moon and the stars of a clean river. And when they realize that right now is about as good as it's going to get, you know, they're going to say, oh, hang on, it's going to get better. Next year it won't be better. Oh, it's going to get better. The year after that, it's not going to get better. 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, when they realize that this river has become a river of death, the fish aren't coming back. And not only that, they killed all the other millions of creatures, crawdads, snakes, all the other aquatic creatures that used to live there. It's going to be too late for them to go back and be made whole and do anything. And that's the thing that's so sad is we've spent so much money creating so much destruction. It's sad. It's just really sad.
And this is something to duly note and put in the records right now, because we told you so, and we were right. I know the thing is though, we're already right. We are already correct. You know, it's right out there. It's just a matter of when it will be revealed to the people who haven't thought very deeply about such things or were very ideologically driven. Brad, I really appreciate your call. I'm burning daylight. I got to roll because after all this heaviness, we need to talk about something a little lighter. Okay. And in this particular case, it's going to be, let's make you a winner on the Diner 62 quiz, okay? A portion of the program, by the way, is sponsored. It's sponsored by Valley View Nursery. Valley View Nursery is a big nursery here in Southern Oregon. Only one that has online pricing. You can find out more at valleyviewnursery.com. And it's a lot closer than you think. Valley View Nursery. Really appreciate their sponsorship. And another sponsorship, Diner 62 Quiz. Diner 62, where that half-ham special is still on, $10.95 Monday through Friday. In the morning, drive-house show, this time 6 to 9 in the morning. All your amazing breakfast favorites and your lunchtime favorites and some of the best salads. You know, frankly, I got to tell you, the taco salad I got from Diner 62 was better than the taco salad I got from a local Mexican restaurant. I'm not going to name names, but I can just tell you it was really, really good. All right. 770-5633. And we'll touch on that here in just a moment.
Thought about purchasing a firearm? With
in South Medford.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
The 962 Real American Quiz. And we're going to talk about the Stars and Stripes. Stars and Stripes Forever. Of course, the Susan March. Love it. But the Stars and Stripes flew in battle for the very first time yesterday in history, 1777. So I'm going to go to line one and see who's there to possibly win the Diner 62 quiz. Good morning. Hi, who's this?
Hi, Bill. This is Chuck.
Chuck. Stars and Stripes flew in battle for the first time September 3rd, 1777. It was during a Revolutionary War skirmish. And 3 months earlier, Congress at that time adopted a resolution stating that the flag of the United States shall be 13 alternate stripes, red and white, and that the Union be 13 stars. And it was based on the Grand Union flag, a banner carried by the Continental Army in 1776. Now, where was the Stars and Stripes first flown? When was that flag first flown in battle? Well, we know when, but was it in Delaware? Was it New York? Was it Virginia? Was it Maryland? Or was it on the Atlantic Ocean? What do you say?
I'll say Delaware.
You'll say Delaware. It's going to be a great morning.
You're a winner!
Now, you have to understand, though, that Brian, in the other room who wrote the quiz, is going, darn, I wasn't able to fool them. But yeah, it was Delaware. Patriot General William Maxwell ordered the Stars and Stripes banner raised at Cooch's Bridge, Delaware, as a detachment of his infantry and cavalry met an advance guard of British and Hessian troops. The rebels were defeated, unfortunately, forced to retreat to General George Washington's main force near Brandywine Creek in Pennsylvania. According to what many historians, Chuck, now regard as legend, Philadelphia seamstress Betsy Ross designed the new Canton for the Stars and Stripes, which consisted of the circle of 13 stars in blue background at the request of General George Washington. Historians have been unable to conclusively prove or disprove it, but, you know, it's a great story. So we're going to stick with that, okay? So,
all right.
All right, hang on, and you're going to Diner 62, and gosh, we'll have another one of these coming up maybe Friday, okay?
All power right. Outages are becoming more common.
Hi, I'm Mark with Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, and I'm on KMED.
It's 8:54. Do some emails of the day. Emails of the day, and that was sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. Just right next door to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant, Freeman Way, all right? By the way, if you don't have any dental insurance, they have a dental plan that works a lot like dental insurance, but lower costs and better benefits. So find out more. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. I love this one from Mark from Grants Pass. Sent me a number of emails today, and he says, Bill, the U.S. Civil War starts in Oregon or Virginia, and the fault lies with Jeff Golden. Ah, Senate Bill 762. Is that where you're going, Mark? And pretty interesting after that. And Bill, he also says, Bill, and after it's done with, ODF law doesn't mean anything in 33 Oregon counties. I'm hedged in Northern California. A little cryptic on that one, Mark, but I do find it interesting. He says, for some reason, they don't hate Pam Marsh as much. Jeff is the enemy right now. Is, in other words, the bigger carrier of Senate Bill 762. Is that kind of where you're going? It could be. Could be. Gar writes me about the Klamath Dams. Morning, Bill. My grandmother used to tell me the same stories about their life living on the Klamath River like Brad's family had. She used to tell me that it was horrible, smelling summers of the fish boiling in the puddles in low snowpack years. The river wouldn't even make a stream some years. Pretty sad. Yeah, but that's all gone. Thank you, Gar. Dale writes me about the jar of water, which I have been holding up there, right? And morning, Bill. That jar of water you described sounds as though it is a colloidal suspension. There is no sediment settling from the colloids. It's as though something went into solution, but it is visible to the naked eye. Speaking of naked, the naked truth is a very long time before fish will survive in that water of the river. Granny writes me with a little quote from Survival Blog. And it's a quote from James Madison, which is interesting. It says, of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes. And armies, debts and taxes are known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. Granny, that's a great quote, worthy of noting, okay? Patrick writes me this morning, Bill, about the badging. We were talking about that with Eric Peters this morning, in which different companies will have the same vehicle. And he reminded me of what I was trying to recall. The Chevy Nova back in the late 70s, maybe it was the early 80s, maybe late 80s, I don't know. Chevy Nova was a Toyota Corolla. I remember that. Chevy Nova and the Toyota Corolla. Now, that was the later iteration with the four banger in it, right? It wasn't a bad car either. The Chevy Nova was just fine. That kind of reminded me. I was at at a car show at the Milan Melon Festival over Labor Day weekend, and there was a gentleman that had an early 1960s Chevy Nova, and oh, it was just done up so custom. It was just beautiful, beautiful. That was the non-Toyota version of it. And it's funny that we've gotten to the point where, and I never thought that we would see the day that cars from the 1980s would start getting collectors' kind of attention. There was a 1980 Pontiac Trans Am there, and it was that pace car model that they had out there. And you look back to 1980, not a great time for American cars in general, but yet it looked like $1 million. And the man who owned it, who bought it from the original owner, was saying, oh, yeah, it's a dog. It's like 140, 150 horsepower. But it looked good doing it. That's all that mattered. So even the 1980s are now starting to become a collectible. Be well. We'll talk again tomorrow, my friend.